Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger, and pardon me, off to a fine start, with your host, Tim Burton, and Cal Fritzy. But Tim Burton is not here today. Everybody is apprised of the fact that he's recovering from a health crisis. It might be quite a while before we hear his dulcet tones on the airwaves. We might get him for maybe 10, 15 minutes, you know, the odd show. This is the first Monday I've done this show in 10 months without him, so you'll have to bear with me, but you know what? We have such wonderful, wonderful friends. We have Dave Milner, the Unpleasant Blind Guy, is joining us. And we have Jeff Mitchell of the EDR radio show that's going to join us. But it's weird. It's a very, very weird feeling when the person that sits beside you every Monday and every Tuesday for close to a year is not right there. So you'll have to bear with me. You know why? Because Tim won't be here to correct my poor grammar, my mispronunciations, and how I get the dates and times wrong on everything. But you know what? I'm sure that Dave and Jeff will be more than capable of putting their heads together and doing so. But, hey, I hope you guys are having a wonderful day all the same. We finally got some sun. It came out for about 30 minutes. So Dobby, Amba, and myself, we went out into the garden and enjoyed a little bit of it. It is clouded over again. We've not had a full day of sunshine here in 36 days now, and yes, I've been counting. This is unbelievable weather. I'm getting rather tired of it. It is depressing. When you don't get your dose of sunshine, it really does weigh on you. If you guys have sunshine, get out of the basement, okay, and get out there and enjoy it. But you had been listening, the opening is by the beautiful Afra Haza. She is a singer who hailed from Israel, who died too young. And that opening song you hear is her speaking of her love of Israel. Tim and myself, we made an executive decision, well, together, that's going to be our opening until Israel squashes Hamas once and for all, in which we hope they do. So I hope you enjoy that. I have another song here I'm going to play later. I just met this gentleman the other day, and his name is Naftali Kafta. He is a singer-songwriter. He hails from Canada. He's from Israel. He is a wonderful musician. I downloaded one of his songs, and I'm going to play Miracle by God by him and Gadi Elbatz later. This man is a wonderment. I just love music. Everybody knows I love music. I sing, I dance, all the way to France. kidding. So you're going to be hearing a lot more by this gentleman, Naftali Kafta. He's just brilliant. And, oh, by the way, we became Facebook friends today. We have a lot to discuss in the next 2 hours. I have some drop-down notes here. But, of course, the theme going to center around something that happened in the United States of America. And Dave Milner is going to help me address that. And then we're going to bring Jeff Mitchell on to back up this. But there was a unbelievable, okay? There was a jihadist serial killer. I only heard about this morning. And you folks know that I read my dailies every single day, and I read them globally. I read them all the way from Canada to the UK to Jerusalem, to everywhere. And I just came across this morning, and I had to find it in one of my blogger sites. And when I did a cross-reference, yep, sure enough, it was in some mainstream media sites. But unreal to me that this got very little attention at the time. This person's name is Ali Muhammad Brown, and he killed 4 people. And when he was arrested, they asked, "Why did you do it?" I'm going to give you a cliff note statement here. He said, "My mission is vengeance for the lives, millions of lives, are lost every day." And, of course, he was taking a run at the great Satan, and we know that is the United States of America. But I want to bring on Agador right now and say hello to him. We lost Jeff. Jeff, please dial back in. But, hey, Dave, how are you today?
I'm really very well here at Anti-Jihad Hot Quarters here in Burlington, Vermont, ready to discuss the issues with you. Yes, I'm very well.
I so appreciate that. I was, oh, gee, trust me, I go to the wrong drop-down menu trying to bring up this article to share in the chat room for everybody. But, hey, you know what? That is the day in the life. I am so pleased that you can be here. I have been so grateful to everybody that is pinch-hitting for our Tim while he recovers. You are a very, very busy man. Tell us what you're up to with your own show.
Oh, you want that first. All right. Well, I just put out a new edition of The Unpleasant Blind Guy. That's at Pundit Press Radio. Everyone can go there and find it. Just look for The Unpleasant Blind Guy. That's on Pundit Press Radio. This one's about 19 minutes long. This is a pre-recorded show. It usually isn't very long because I know people don't have a lot of time because they're listening to fine shows like this. And they don't have a lot of time for me, but I guarantee that if you listen, you'll find maybe some different issues covered than you're seeing that everyone else is doing. Or if you find the same old issue being covered, I'm going to try and cover it from a different angle and give you the perspective of a guy who kind of knows what it's like to live with the beneficence. The beneficence, yeah, I can say the word, the beneficence of the state and the consequences thereof. So it's something that that I hope everyone will give a listen to. This week's might make a few people angry, but I hope it'll make people think more. And that's really it for my little show. I'm very excited also to be doing Islam Exposed with you on Thursdays. And, you know, that is an excellent show. And this Thursday, we're going to have a fine guest co-host. Usually Tim Burton hosts this with us. But we're going to have a fine guest host on Thursday. I won't let it out who it's going to be. But let's just say that a red-blooded male like me is going to be very happy with the fine bookends I'm going to have that day.
If you notice that I was absent for about 40 seconds, it is because my server dropped me.
Oh, great. Okay. So, hey, it's a typical day on Blog Talk Radio. Excellent.
And you know what? I have to say, I cannot blame Blog Talk Radio for this one this time. I have to blame my personal cable server.
these things just seem to happen together, and there are so many, most people don't understand, there are so many links between us here doing the podcasts and what people hear on their home systems, and any of it can break down. I just blame Blog Talk Radio by default because it's usually at fault, but go. But listen, at least there isn't random music playing, so you know we do have that, and we're not all switched over to lobster cooking with Becky
flower arrangements.
Right. Or flower arrangements with Gunter.
How to arrange flowers? You put the stems in the water.
There you go. Yep.
Ta-da!
Put the stems in the water. Keep the petals right side up. Don't cough. Oh, but.
But yeah, we do. I have to say, half the excitement of doing live radio is that you just never know what you're going to get. Like Forrest Gump would say, it's live radio is like a box of chocolates.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. But
it absolutely is.
Just to let people know, I put the link for all the shows that you can hear on Pundit Press right there in the show notes. You can listen to The Unpleasant Blind Guy. You can listen to all of the RSB shows there as well. There are tons of shows there to listen to. And please scroll up and please look at my slides. I'm always begging people to look at my slides. Do you know that is the most time-consuming task that I have when I'm putting these shows together, because you're looking for the perfect slide. You want it to reflect the topic. And looking for Tim It's Hell on Wheels.
Oh. Well, you know our Tim.
Hey, you're
always
not much easier, buddy.
Well, you haven't asked me for any suggestions either, although there is one that that I have suggested that you didn't run this week. Maybe you can run it on Thursday for Islam Exposed. It's a chilly one. I think you know the slide I'm referring to. But, yeah, you know what? This is what one of the things that we have to do as people who are pro-civil rights and anti-jihad is we have to advertise ourselves to others in every way that we can. I've got a friend who didn't understand why I didn't like the fact that the little graphic that a very good friend from Twitter made for me wasn't appearing when I was posting my little show on Facebook. And he said, "Oh, well, it's just audio. As long as the link's there, nobody cares." And I told him, "No, you don't understand. Even a blind guy knows this. It catches the eye. The graphic catches the eye and grabs the interest. And that's how a lot of photojournalism works, or any kind of PR. That's how any of this works. The image catches the eye. The headline catches the eye. The first couple of paragraphs catch the eye. It's getting that attention. It's grabbing someone's attention, especially someone that might not usually listen to you. That's key
yeah.
in what we do. And I think that's key in the counter-jihad movement, too, because we've got a very high mountain to climb because there are a lot of people who are still asleep, and we need to wake them up.
Exactly, and this is why I was referring to this story. And I'm going to ask Moving Forward to join us in a few moments. I want to relate this
okay.
story because it is very disturbing. And I'm trying to get Jeff back. Jeff totally dropped off the grid. I don't know what happened to him, but hopefully he'll be able to find his way back. But this story comes from the National Review Online, and it was written by Michelle Malkin. I adore this lady. She is fantastic. But
you do.
This was unreal. You know, like, this went on for 2 months. There was an armed jihadist serial killer. He was running loose across the country. Now, there were at least 4 innocent men died this spring.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Four innocent men died this spring and summer in acts of vengeance on behalf of aggrieved Muslims. And this is what the self-confessed murderer has now proclaimed. Now, I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but I didn't, not until this morning. Actually, not until late last night, early this morning. Now, the usual suspects who decry hate crimes and gun violence, they've not said a thing, Dave. Where are they, and why not? You know, because it is like OJ's glove. If the narrative doesn't fit, you must acquit. Now, the admitted killer will be cast as just another lone wolf whose familiar grievances and bloodthirsty Islamic implication means nothing. Okay, we know that's crap. Now, Michelle Malkin, I'm going to quote her verbatim. She says, "Enough with the whitewashing. Meet Ali Muhammad Brown. His homicidal Islamic terrorist spree took him from coast to coast. The 29-year-old career thug admitted to killing Leroy Henderson in Seattle in April," Matt said, "and Down Anderson Young in Seattle on June 1st, and college student Brendan Tevlin, who was 19, in Essex County in New Jersey on June 25th. Tevlin was gunned down in his family Jeep on his way home from a friend's house. Ballistics and other evidence linked all the victims to Muhammad Brown. Police apprehended him last month, hiding him in an encampment near the Watchtongue Mountains of West Orange, New Jersey. Now, he was on the run, and he disguised himself as a Muslim kafaya. He carried a notebook with jihadist scribblings and advice on evading detection." Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah, that's typical. That's his name for you. Michelle Malcolm, she obtained the latest charging documents filed in Washington State, and this detailed the defiant domestic terrorist motives. Now, when he was asked by investigators, our little friend here, Muhammad Brown, said that the Tevlin's slaying was a just kill. The devout Islamic adherent proclaimed, "My mission is vengeance for the lives. Millions of lives are lost every day." And this is echoing jihadist Fort Hood mass serial killer Nadal Hussein. Muhammad Brown, he cited Muslim deaths in Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan as the catalyst for his one-man Islamic terror campaign. All these lives are taken every single day by America, by this government. So a life for a life. And, of course, we remember the Fort Hood shootings in which Nadal Hussein killed 13 people, which is actually 14 because one of those victims was pregnant, and so the baby, of course, died. Now, when a detective asked him, Dave, to clarify whether all four murders were, quote, done for vengeance for the actions of the United States in the Middle East, Muhammad Brown stated unequivocally, yes. He added he was just doing his small part. Oh, my God.
Oh.
I'm going to pause it right there. It's a lengthy article, but I want to pause it right there, and I want to come up for air and let you address what you've heard so far.
Yeah, it's so precious that he wants to do his small part, and I know that that his imam would be very proud. I heard about this a few days ago, but I hadn't heard a lot, and part of that is because our media here in the States, and certainly our government, are very much into covering up anything that has to do with anything violent done by any Islamist. We're just going to take that and put it away and not let anyone see it because they want our people to stay asleep. It's the same as with this video of the beheading. They want that suppressed as well.
They want
to keep our people asleep. And this is not a surprise. In fact, the only thing that surprises me is that we haven't seen this before now. But we are seeing it now. I'd like to say to my American friends, you know, we have been telling you about this for a while. Some have been telling you about it for years, and now it's in our face. Even back when I thought there was such a thing as a radical Islamist, I was worried about suicide bombers in our grocery stores.
Oh yeah,
it quite honestly shocks me in a way that we haven't seen this before because we are such an open country. Even when we didn't have this president just throwing open the borders for every lice-filled gangbanger that wanted to ooze up here and you know, maybe bring about one or two real children for every 10 of them, we still had a very porous border. People could just come in.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've said often, Islam knows no borders. Its influence knows no borders. If someone becomes...
It doesn't respect man-made law, certainly.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And if someone is a devout Islamist, then they're going to do what they are told to do in the Islamist texts. And one of those things is to exact revenge for perceived crimes. And apparently this person falls into the same category as some people that I've heard just speaking jihad on other blog talk radio shows, blaming the United States of America for everything, saying that if the United States of America didn't stick their big noses in the Arabic countries, there wouldn't be any of this terror, but of course, they failed to mention that if we didn't stick our big noses into those Arabic countries, most of those people would be dirt poor. Most of them still are, but the fact of the matter is that a good number of them have jobs and money because of the oil business. And now getting back to this though, Islam has a long reach and a deadly reach. And this should be yet another wake-up call to Americans. Stop watching Dancing with the Stars and all that kind of thing long enough to open your minds to the truth that we need to declassify Islam as a religion, disarm all Islamists, and we have a lot of armed Islamist camps here in the States, and we need to remove each and every Islamist from any position of power over anyone else. Nothing short of that will do. And I think Tim Burton, who is still listening, would agree with me wholeheartedly on this. This is sadly the first one of these that we're hearing about, but I do not believe it will be the last. And I will throw the mic back to you.
I want to address this a little further, and we do have a caller. As a matter of fact, we got Jeff Mitchell back, and thank goodness for that. I'm going to bring Jeff in a moment, but I want Moving, because this is a story out of the United States, I would love for Moving to address this. And Moving, welcome to the show, and how are you today, dear man?
Oh, hello, Kel, and hello, Agador.
Moving.
And it's nice and sunny here.
I wasn't going to say anything. I wasn't going to talk about how it's nice and clear and warm here in Vermont. But please go ahead, move
it. But it is humid, so
yeah, we got
hot
that too,
hot and humid. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the discussion was, I guess if I caught it right, if I understand and comprehend it right, is that our media is pretty much ignoring all of these Islamic and jihad incursions on ordinary everyday people and how they affect our lives with all these heinous acts of terrorism.
And only ignoring, but burying.
Well, what's really sad about the issue is that, you know, the media, this New World Order agenda, is just using this Islamic jihad as an enabler, and they want us to be compliant globalist little slaves and go to our institutions of higher learning and accept the idea that all Islam is not bad. There's moderate Muslims out there. I would kind of counter that point with, well, where are they in saying that these radicals are bad? They're not stepping up to the plate with the rest of us. They're just not saying a word, not getting involved, being passive. That's kind of sad. And there was some, just in the news this week, and it's relative to this point, Representative Ted Poe from Texas, he said that the ISIS cartels were active in Mexico, the Texas border, and in Texas in the border states. And, you know, I looked at that last week, and I said, you know, in Mexico, the cartels have had this war going on for years, and it's, well, a year dying in Mexico from these wars. Mm-hmm. And just the last few years since there's this exchange with the Islamics has been in place with these radicals, they've been doing things like cutting off heads and using IEDs in Mexico and in Texas and the border states. And the media is not focusing on that problem. So our southern border has become a collaborative jihadi zone with a bunch of terrorists from the Middle East and from, these cartels, all the worst of both combinations. And it pains me to see that Eric Holder is supporting the cartels with these, you know, guns, and it pains me to see that the president's not putting a stop to the immigration from the Middle Eastern countries that are, you know, like terrorizing people and burning churches. They should just mm-hmm. not accept any immigrants from countries that are burning out churches and burning out temples and archaeological sites and trying to, you know, mess with, culture that goes back thousands of years. They're allowing more immigration of these people into the country legally and illegally, and it's so scary. So I can
You bring up a really good point, and my call got dropped again, so I had to dial back in. I did manage to catch what you said, though, about the infiltration of our institutions of higher learning in particular. I want to suggest to everybody, go to Amazon, buy this book by Paul Sutliff. It's called Stealth Jihad Phase 2. Targeting American colleges, and please leave it on your desk. It never leaves mine. This is a very comprehensive academic look into what is going on in our North American and in the West in general universities moving. I want to bring on Jeff Mitchell to address this because Jeff is seeing things happening in the UK. He is our voice from across the pond. And Jeff, hello, welcome to the program, and how are you today?
Good evening, Carol. Good evening, Ecuador, and of course, good evening, moving forward. My apologies. Just about to connect up and doing what I was doing, and my computer decided to didn't want to work, so I had to reboot, Kel. So that's why you see me go off the radar. So my apologies, because I'd have been here probably 10 minutes earlier, but I had to reboot. But a very, very interesting conversation that yourself, Ecuador, and moving have been having. And going on the same theme as that and what my thoughts are, it's very interesting because, as you know, Kel, I listen to Israeli television online, and there was a gentleman and he told it exactly what I've been saying, what most people know, that we are at war. This is a war. We're all at war with this fundamental Islam. The total thing, we are, every nation in the world is at war with Islam. But as he said, that the politicians, the only people that actually agreed to that would be Benjamin Netanyahu. And he would totally be in agreement with that statement. But it seems like everybody else, oh, no, let's suppress it. We don't want to panic the public. The panic is already there, guys. And we know how a foothold that this terrible cult has taken right away across the globe. This isn't just a European issue. As you see, lots of things coming out from, well, you know, the way I look at it, just the last couple of weeks, you've seen a British jihadist actually execute an American journalist. And that just sent me into despair to think what we've been talking about. And then you see all the politicians flapping around, saying they're going to do this, saying they're going to do that. And we know that Islam is the whole thing. You look into the book, you start reading, all them pages there, it doesn't matter. You've got to take half the book out to take away the violence against Christians and Jews. We're seeing a genocide of Christians across this globe, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we're seeing. And other good people, you know, whatever faith they may be. Most people, like myself, Kel, like you, I'm Christian, right? And I've never tried to put my faith upon anybody. My faith is my faith. It's important to me. It's a personal thing. And it's like many others of us that speak on these issues. But when I hear that, it moves me. And it angers me at the same time that the free world isn't doing nothing for the plight of these people, what's going on. And it does drive you to despair. You want to shake them all up together and say, do something now. There's people dying, children being cut in half by these people, these barbarians. They're worse than anything like Al-Qaeda. We know what Al-Qaeda's like. But they make them look like the teddy bears picnic guys. And something really needs to be done. And you can hear, when you listen to us, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we're not alarmists. We speak facts. We speak the truth. And it's about time that politicians listen to what we've got to say. Because we're going to remove them in the end. If they put people in power, that's going to do the right thing for our nations. Our nations are in need of serious leadership now, aren't they, Kel and Agador, and moving forward? It definitely is. And the West is weak against Islam at this moment in time. It's looking weak. It's shown itself to be weak. And that's the worst thing you can do with this enemy, is to show any type of weakness. And I think everyone on the panel would agree with that. And I hope that everybody in the chat room and your wider audience agrees, Kel. But I'm very much like yourself, very much like Agador, and of course, moving forward, we're just here, we're talking what we see, and we state the facts. We, as you said before, Kel, we're citizen journalists. That's what we are. We're the people for the people, and we're not censored by any sort of state TV, state radio. We tell it the way it is. But anyway, Kel, it's so good to be on the show this evening with yourself and with Agador.
It's great to have you here, Jeff and Agador.
It's my pleasure, Kel.
And Moving, I can't thank you, gentlemen, enough for helping me out in my time of need. discussing this article as we were, this is just amazing to me. And, of course, he was apprehended in Seattle. And I believe he was. Let me carry through the article and let's,
I think that's true, Kel, but please go ahead.
He was, I guess Ed Murray is a left-wing mayor, and he was quite eager to rush to issue a statement, which might as well, according to Michelle Malkin, said, put the incipient coexist bumper sticker on your forehead, buddy. But he was so quick to issue a statement asserting that Mohammed Brown's seething, deadly hatred did not reflect the values of Muslims. Oh! But the
typical
fact is, Ali Mohammed Brown had plenty of company. Seattle alone has been a long, festering hotbed of anti-American, anti-Semitic jihadism. What happened in 2011? Gentlemen, I implore you. A Muslim terror ring led by Abu Talib Abdul Latif and Wali Mujahideen plotted to kill officers and employees of the Department of Defense who worked at the military interest processing stations located in the Federal Center South Building in Seattle, Washington, and to kill persons assisting in assisting such officers and employees in the performance of their duties using fully automatic weapons, pistols, and fragmentation grenades. Okay, in 2007, Seattle jihadist James Ujamaa pleaded guilty to terrorism charges related to his plan to establish a terror training ground in Bly, Oregon. He had previously pleaded guilty to aiding the Taliban. Okay, let's keep going, shall we? In 2006, in Everett, Washington, Islamic revenge seeker Naveed Haq shot six innocent women and killed one at the Jewish Federation of Greater Seattle building while spewing anti-Israel hatred and Muslim diatribes. Okay, in 2002, James Ujamaa's mother, my apologies, mosque leader, Abdul Rahim Al Arshad Ali of the radical Dar al Salam Mosque in Seattle Central District was first arrested on illegal weapons charges. He had provided arms to fellow Seattle area Muslim cleric Semi Osman. The ethnic Lebanese-born in Sierra Leone had served in a Naval Reserve Fueling Unit based in Tacoma, Washington. Osman had access to fuel trucks similar to the type used by Al-Qaeda in the 1996 bombing of the Culber Towers, which killed 19 U.S. airmen and wounded nearly 400 other Americans. Osman later pleaded guilty to illegal arms possession. Another militant, Seattle jihadist Muslim convert Ruben Shumker, a.k.a. Amil Abdul Muhammad M., was arrested after an FBI raid in 2004 for his role in a terror financing scheme. He skipped out of his sentencing hearing and turned up in Somalia, where he was killed fighting the U.S. military. Terror group Al-Shabaab held Muha Amin as a martyr. And this brings us back to our dear little friend, Ali Mohammed Brown, who had been arrested 10 years ago as part of Muha Amin's suspected terror financing ring. A decade later, despite being on the Fed's radar screen, four innocent men are dead at his hands. These homegrown Muslim haters don't want to coexist. They want to kill and help fund and train other Islamic killers. They are living and working among us, embedded in local mosques and inside our military. Where are our political leaders making kumbaya excuses, sitting on the sidelines and golfing while homegrown and global jihad burns? Agador, to you.
Oh, thank you. Right. This is, I know some people who live in the Seattle area, so I have a little bit of familiarity with this. We see this so often in the West here, with people who belong to labor parties, the Democratic Party, whatever the left of center political establishment is. They depend so much on multiculturalism to forward their agenda that they have embraced Islam and Islamists, and in the name of that are willing to give them any and every consideration, all the way up to the absurd. I refer to the two, I'll say it, a-holes who killed Lee Rigby, saying in the dock at their trial that denying what the judge had just said, that they were not acting in accordance to Islam. The two killers themselves said they were acting in accordance with Islam. You've got the British PM saying that the killing of Lee Rigby was not an act of proper Islam. And now you've got the mayor of Seattle doing the same thing. Now, I don't want our friends on the left to think that we're a bunch of righties that hate people on the left, but we have to begin keep sending the message to the left that Islam does not have anything that they want. In fact, it has everything they don't want, including not wanting to coexist with anyone else, with any other religion, with any other thought, not with agnostics, not with atheists, not with anyone who is not an Islamist. And you'd better be there. Flavor of Islam as well. We saw a story earlier, Kel. I don't know if you're going to want to cover this later on, but Iran has begun sending tanks into Iraq to fight ISIS. This is what Islam is about.
I would like to explore that, but I want to cross-reference it because
That's what I'm doing.
That's a fascinating story.
It is. Islam is about war and hate. Okay.
I'm going to pass the mic to back to Moving, and we're wrapping up this story out of the United States. I'm very, very glad that we have two American patriots on the line with us, and Moving. All these stories that I related in this article, I had no idea just how prolific jihad could reach Middle America, as it were.
Go ahead and
you know
unmute
what?
Moving.
It would help if I unmuted him.
There you go.
Hey, Moving.
It should not be a surprise to anyone how badly this I'll call it the jihad movement has influenced, and I think it's not just Middle America. It's the highest levels of government. I mean, look at our president's cabinet. It's full of people who are supportive of the Islamic jihad, and it's up to them to defend themselves because all of their actions clearly show that everything from immigration of people from hostile countries who have no support for, you know, freedom of, let me just say tolerance. Okay, just simple tolerance. Burning churches. What's happening now is making what happened in Bosnia-Herzegovina look like a, you know, kindergarten activity. It's 10 times worse, and it's on 10 times the scale. And we have unfortunately, because we have a president who, you know, doesn't care, and the American public who doesn't care because they're not doing enough to push back on. And unfortunately, until the football is turned off and, you know, people can't get their six-pack of beer, most of them aren't going to do anything. unfortunately. That's kind of the state we're in right now. And the government The government continues to push out subsidies to people so they can sit on their laurels and remain complacent. And that's a sad state of affairs. I often wonder how long it's going to continue before things just get bad all of a sudden. I just keep wondering.
I have a question, and I want to direct this to Jeff, and that we're seeing these atrocities taking place in North America. England has been seeing them for many, many, many years. We say that it will never happen in the United States nor Canada, and people know I do not include Mexico because I do not consider Mexico to be part of North America in my personal frame of mind. I think it's a third world cesspool that belongs to South America. But Canada and the United States, we see what's going on now in England, but it's catching up much more quickly. And Jeff, when you hear these stories, are you surprised at how quickly we're catching up, or do you think that, Islam is just following the path of the timetable?
Well, as as you know me, Kel, you know my thoughts on that, Islam isn't just a stealth jihad now. This is a full gallop in Islam,
yeah,
that we see before us. And it's galloping its way right away across the globe. And am I surprised with things that I'm hearing coming out of Canada, coming out of America? No, because we've been warning that it is coming your way. It's probably there. You look at Dearborn. I mean, you got it right there. It's right out there. It's in your face. And, of course, when, as you're saying earlier on, I mean, the Muslim Brotherhood have embedded right into the highest positions and in military positions as well. You see, and in the FBI, don't forget, it's there, and how we deal with it. Now, that's something that does need to be discussed. They need to be dragged out and screaming from their positions. As I say, these people shouldn't have that, the chance of having those sort of positions put in front of them, because these are deadly. They don't want the good for the rest of the people out there. All they want to do is bring down America from inside and all of our other European countries, destroy from within. This has always been their motto, destroy from within. Infiltrate, slowly, surely get a grip and then start switching, turning it up, turn the gas up more. And that is exactly what you're all seeing at this moment in time. No, I'm not surprised, Kel. I'm not surprised. And I'm saddened at the same time, because it's happening much quicker than what I thought it was going to happen. I was expecting it to happen.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
You know, people's thinking years. Now, I'm talking now. I'm going to tell you how I think it is. It's going to be less than 2 years. And I do believe that the Islam itself will declare a total war against the world's infidels. I can see it coming. It's drawing that way. 95%. We are in a global war, even though our politicians are not admitting it. And when they do, it's going to be a hell of a battle to sort this, these people out and put them back in their place where they belong. And it's going to take, people's bloodshed, people's sacrifices to put the wrongs right. And the politicians who put us in this position, don't you think you will not be unaccountable? You will be accountable for your inactivity. When our nation has called upon you to do the right thing, you undenied, you pretend it wasn't happening. You said, this is nothing to do with Islam, Cameroon alone, and many others. And trying to hide it under the carpet, pretend it's not happening, and trying to put it in a self-sense of, making you feel comfortable. Don't worry, it'll all be sorted out. This is too serious just to be sorted out by words. The time for words is over. The time for actions has got to begin as soon as possible. I really do mean that now. Time, and we said this before, time is of an essence. I do believe we're coming to a critical mass I know if Tim was here, and he'd probably agree with me, and he'd probably say the same, that we are coming to that moment in time. None of us, it's a forbidden, it's a, you know, it's horrible to feel that this is going to happen, but I can't see any other way out now. The way that it's driving itself, Islam is driving itself forward with everything it's doing. As you see the connive, the way that it's conniving, the way that the Jimmies are out there facilitating this death cult. Let's call it what it is, guys. It's a death cult.
Mm-hmm.
Look around. Look at the blood that's being spilt. I said this last night, Kel. You know, what we're seeing is what Enoch Powell predicted, rivers of blood flowing in the streets. Are we not seeing that? Is that right, what that gentleman said? You know, because I look at it this way. Anything he said is coming.
John Raspell.
It's happening.
Yeah. John Raspell,
right,
and his speech, The Rivers of Blood, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, what...
Sorry. That was Enoch Powell. My apologies.
Yeah,
I got
correct.
John Raspell refused with Camp of the Saints. My apologies, people.
No problem, Kel. But that is the case, isn't it? And, you know, I've often said it, and, you know, hindsight is a fine thing, but, you know, as I say, that the great war leader at the time, going back in 1898, saying about this forbidden of the Muslims, Muhammadism in Islam is like hydrophobia in dogs. Yeah, and that's what we're seeing. You know, they've got the bloodlust, don't they? You know, it's terrible what's going on out there.
Oh,
and I do believe
it absolutely
that time
is.
Now is for action. Sorry, Kelly.
Nope. You are bang on the money. Bigfoot had a comment in the chat room. Agador, I want you to relate that and expand on it, if you could.
Okay. Sure. Bigfoot was talking about something that happened in the 90s, and it relates to what's happening today. Now, back in the 90s, the villains were, well, they still are, these evil white, they have to be white, militia, right-wing members who love the Republican Party and all of that, and this was all related to some actual racists that did burn some black churches here in the United States. This happened all across the country in the 1990s, and there was quite the furor about it, as there should have been. You know, we saw that going on, and everyone said, "Yes, this is terrible. This is wrong, and this should never happen." All right, but what do we have now? We have the media covering up jihad, kinetic jihad. Not civilizational jihad, not yet another mosque being built, not halal food, all right, actual kinetic jihad going on right here in the United States of America. And the reason the media isn't covering it is because it is an Islamist. And it goes into the dimitude of people in this country. These people are either uninformed, brainwashed, or paid off. Those are the three choices that you have at this point, particularly in the media. And many of them in the media are paid off. They're constantly being fed money, and they're constantly being told it's not as bad as these people say. They don't know what they're talking about. The only bad Islamists are radical Islamists, radicalization, this, that, and the other thing. I have to say, I actually saw this on Glenn Beck's channel. I believe it was yesterday. He's got a guest commentator on there. I forget who it was. But they actually did speak to the mark. They said that this sort of thing is now all of this. ISIS, the guy we're talking about now, everyone is not a new threat. It's a threat that has been there all along, and it's just now reaching a boiling point here in the United States. So there are a few people in media beginning to wake up, but the Glenn Beck channel is only the tip of the iceberg of old media that is starting to wake up to this overall threat that is Islam. And I will, hate to do this, but I will give Bill Maher of Politically Incorrect some credit, because he also says that it is Islam, not radical Islam, but just Islam. So
I have to admit, and I interjected because I'm not a fan of Bill Maher. I think that he is so left, he tips over. But when it comes to Islam, he is always spot on. And Agador, please go right back ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. He is one of the people on the left that we have to wake up, because these cities like Seattle, all right, are fertile ground for Islamists to plant their roots and to get sympathy. They know that as long as they leave those local people alone, for the most part, they'll come out, and their politicians will come out and make the excuses for them. The same thing is going on in Maine. No Way 90's in the chat box, I think, still, and he will tell you that. It's beginning here in Vermont. I'm going to relate a story, probably on Islam Exposed, about something that happened just about a mile away from me in regard to that. And it's happening in other places in the United States of America. Folks, I want to tell anyone who's listening to this in archive, This isn't just over in the UK anymore. It isn't in the Middle East. It's in the United States of America. It's in your face. And I'm going to turn the mic back over to you.
Thank you, Agador, a.k.a. Dave, a.k.a. the unpleasant blind guy.
So many names.
We have somebody joining us on the line right now, and I would like to bring this gentleman in and what's your name? And hey, what do you want? Meow.
Well, good evening, everybody. Good evening, Kel. Good evening,
hi, Tim.
Dave.
Good evening,
Jeff.
Tim.
Good evening, Moving, and anybody
hey,
else who's
Tim.
Online at the minute. Hey, how you
what's
all
up?
Doing?
Hey, what's up?
Well,
yeah,
more importantly, how are you doing?
Well,
yeah.
Not too bad at all. Thank you. I sent my friend Mr. G. Reaper away a couple of days ago, empty-handed. He hasn't come knocking on the
grim.
Door since then, so I guess, you know, things aren't looking too bad. So I'm I'm sitting up in bed at the moment with a mug of cocoa, listening to you fine people on the subject of the subject most close to my heart, the wonderful wacky world of Islam. And it's been most entertaining, it really has. So I'd just like to say hello to everybody listening as well, and anybody who I didn't thank from yesterday with their good wishes and their prayers for me, I really, really did appreciate it, and thank you very much, because, you know, it's one of those times of your life where you need all the good wishes and prayers you can get.
So thank you very much indeed.
You'll be back in the gym in
Tim.
No time, Tim. And we're happy to have you here.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, no time in the middle of October with my luck.
Yes, I've still got to take it easy. I mean, for those of you don't know what's involved when you have a health crisis of this sort of magnitude, you have to really, really take it easy. I mean, I said to the nurse at the hospital, well, the cardiologist, I said, well, you know, will I be able to get back to the gym next week? And I was sort of given a very stern look indeed. And no, there's no way
you can do that. Hey, Tim.
Moving
has a question from the chat room. He wants to know if anybody tried to steal your watch while you were in the hospital. And I wanted to say, I hope it was the wonky one.
Yeah. Oh, well, yes, you know, I had to keep the gold Rolex tucked away well out of sight, you know, in case anything, there was any misfortunes. But, there was no problem at all with that. I have to say, for those of you who haven't had the pleasure of being in a hospital run by the NHS, I mean, you do hear some horror stories, but I have to say that for all the time I was there, and I was there for several days, I couldn't fault them in the slightest. You know, they were there there, right there with everything whenever I needed it. And it was absolutely faultless, and I've got nothing but good things to say about our NHS. So I just wanted to throw that out in case there's any doctors or nurses, especially if my cardiologist is listening. If I go back
you
the
never
hospital,
know, Jim.
And she
you
says,
never know, mate.
You were saying bad things about me on your radio show. I'm going to inject you with something that you really don't want. No, I'm sure she would. I'm sure she would do that. You know.
But
you
hey, you know what? It's
well,
great
to
hear your voice. It really is. This is the first time that I've done the Monday show without you in 10 months. So it's kind of weird. But we have a great team of people that are helping us out. Ladies and gentlemen, just to remind you, you are listening to the Red Fox Blogger Monday edition, heard 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and your hosts are Tim Burton and Cal Fritzy. Tim is on the mend, but we have wonderful people helping us out. We have Dave Milner, we have Jeff Mitchell, we have Movin helping everybody out here, so it's not all bad. As G-Ski would say, it's all good, it's all gravy, but it's not going to be all gravy until I know that Tim can do a marathon again.
Can I interject, Gail, just for a second? Don't forget,
Jeff,
we had Wahabi was sending. Yes, Tim, just to give you a bit of a heads up, we had Wahabi on the other night, and he sent you his best wishes as well. So,
oh yeah,
and
please tell him that I really appreciate the yak steaks that he sent along for me. You know, they were wondering what to do with them when they arrived at the hospital, and I just said, "Well, look, medium rare is pretty good," and I tried them, and they were absolutely wonderful. So thank you very much, Wahabi. Much appreciated.
Well, there you go.
And Tim, you also got a job offer from Wahabi.
Let's have Wahabi share with you himself. Hey, Wahabi,
oh,
are you
there?
About? I think he might be. We can try.
Hello, this is
there it
Wahabi
is.
Here.
Oh,
in Afghanistan, and I think I hear not so nice Tim Burton online today. How are you, terrible Tim?
Oh, very good. Thank you, Wahabi. Salaam alaikum. Salaam alaikum.
yes. I don't know if you had got letter from Spongistan job. If you have a trouble with the job, being long in hospital, we have offered you a job as a director of operations of a salt mine, and we did not get a reply via the fax note.
Oh well, you can be quite sure that as soon as I'm back to 100% health, that CV will be winging its way to you. In fact, yes, salt mine sounds absolutely perfect because I'm going to need a bit of that in my diet from now on. I think they said so. They definitely said something about extra salt, or was it less salt? I can't remember. It was something. Definitely something about salt. So a job in a salt mine sounds absolutely ideal. Thank you for that.
Yes,
a director as well, Tim. A director.
Yes, it's not eating salt. Maybe you have to, everybody has to pitch in from top of company to bottom. You have to carry a lot of salt on your back.
Oh, right. Well, okay. Well, I'm already halfway there because apparently I'm carrying an awful lot of salt all over my body and I have to do something about it before too long. I mean, the only thing I would say is when you sent that wonderful first aid parcel to me with all the yak steaks, the nurses confiscated the bottles of Johnny's walking liquor and I couldn't have any of that in the hospital at all. There was a lot of very wobbly nurses the following day, so I think I know where it all went.
Oh, well, next time you go to hospital, maybe you should bring a big sword for you. So anyone, you know, takes your things, you can, you know, take care of things.
Oh, yeah, that's an excellent idea. I can't...
Took your Johnny Walker's liquor, Tim. Yeah. I can't believe that. Confiscated it.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, they did say they gave me a little survey sheet that I had to fill in. You know, how was your stay in the hospital? And you know, I filled it in. I had to say I couldn't really fault them, apart from obviously taking off the Johnny's Walking Liquor. But I mean, you know, you expect that in a hospital. So I gave them all 100% on the survey. They're all pretty good. They're all pretty good in over here. I mean, I dare say that you know, the nurses in Sunjistan are pretty good too. Is that right, Wahabi?
All got beards.
Well, I do not want to compare these things. Usually here, when people get sick, they go to hospital. They don't get better. But if you gave me good idea, I will send sick people on barge. I would like to recommend to our grand minister that if people get sick, they go to your hospital.
Yeah, excellent. Well, we do a good trade over here in what we call health tourists, and we have a lot of people coming over here.
Only
yak barges.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know,
they will stay there. They will stay there with you after they are west, and maybe not come back.
Yes, well, I think that's an excellent proposal. You know, I think, you know, the more people from Spongistan we have over here, the better. You know, it's I can see the multiculturalist in me is sort of coming out all positive on that. So yeah, that sounds like a brilliant idea, Wahabi. Absolutely.
Yes,
brilliant.
I must go, Tim Burton. Satellite is breaking up, and you be well.
I will, and I'll speak to you again sometime very soon, Wahabi. Thanks again. And more
goodbye
power to
Wahabi,
you guys. Goodbye.
That was
thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you, Wahabi. I don't
thank
have
you, Wahabi.
His closing music that Jeff has, but I can try. Yakety yak.
How about that?
Very good.
Oh, but you know what? We are going to take a bit of a break and allow our Tim to catch his breath and give everybody a chance to refresh their coffees, teas, whatever they're imbibing in.
Johnny Walker's liquor?
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
And my glass is getting a bit empty, yeah. So.
There you go. Passes the bottle over to Agador. Be careful, Tim. Don't have too much of that Johnny Walker's liquor, because it's, you know.
No, I won't. I'm going
to
be taking it easy, but I will be listening in to you guys and carry on with great work on the show. And I'll speak to you all again very soon.
Tim, thank you for calling.
Take care, Tim. God bless you, brother. Take care.
Okay, see you all soon. Bye now.
I'll talk to you tomorrow at some point or whatever. Tim, thank you so very much. It's just everybody is just so grateful that they could hear your voice. There you go.
We'll be speaking
very soon.
Well, I just want to say thanks to everybody again for all your support and prayers. And, yes, I will definitely be speaking to you again soon. So I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye, Tim.
Bye-bye, mate. Bye for now, Tim.
And everybody, gentlemen, yes, it's always reassuring to hear that your people are on the mend and that they're all doing okay. Actually, this song kind of ties in with Tim had a very, very serious health scare. He was caught in time, thank goodness. He has to have more procedures, but... He's going to be running those marathons, I assure you. And he is going to be active in the Counter Jihad movement once again. But we are going to take that break. And we're going to listen to this song, which is, amazingly, I did not even tie this in. It's entitled Miracles. And this is by Gad Elbaz and Naftali Kelsa. These are... musicians. They are based out of Canada, both from Israel. This song is 4 minutes long. We're going to see everybody back here in 4 minutes. ¶¶
המיסים ועל הפורקן ועל הגבורות ועל התשורות על המיסים ועל הפורקן ועל הגבורות על הניסים ועל הפורקן ועל הגיבורות ועל התשורות על הניסים ועל הפורקן ועל הגיבורות שעשית לאבותינו בימים ההם בזמן הזה שעשית לאבותינו בימים ההם redeemed the sons of Israel from Mitzrayim for the miracles we saw at the Red Sea the water split and we walked home free for the miracles up on Mount Sinai we heard the reply of the Most High for the miracles in the Holy Land Jericho couldn't stand against God's hand for the miracles when Goliath got knocked out by David's slingshot for the miracles of the Maccabees brought the Greeks down to their knees for the miracles back in Shushan God bless Esther and curse Haman
Shasita Lavotenu Bayamim Ahen Bazman Hazeh Shasita Lavotenu Bayamim Ahen
soul's been restored within for the miracles happening in my body so everything works when I go to the party for the miracles I can see and smell and hear and touch and taste as well for the miracles that you clothe and feed and provide me with all I need for the miracles that I was born free my work but there's no slavery for me for the miracles that you let me look inside and learn from your holy book for the miracles may they all increase love and light and joy and peace.
Al hanisim ve'al hapukan ve'al hagiburot. 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 She'asita rabotenu bayamim ahen bazman hazeh. She'asita rabotenu bayamim ahen. שעשית לאבותינו בימים ההם בזמן הזה שעשית לאבותינו בימים ההם
back everybody and just to remind you you're listening to the Red Fox Blogger Monday edition 3 p.m. Eastern Time with your host Cal Fritzy that's me and my absent host is Tim Burton but he did manage to call in Tim it was an honor and a pleasure and a wonderment to hear your voice we wish you a very speedy recovery on your health crisis but I have people helping me out in the studio, and that is Moving Forward, who joined us. He is on hiatus right now himself, but he's still listening. We have Agador, that is Dave Milner. He is the Unpleasant Blind Guy. And, of course, we have Jeff Mitchell of EDL Radio right here in the studio, as well as Sweet Sue from New Mexico. Joining us in the chat room is Bigfoot. the we have various guests. Okay, you know what? Some of these people were on the line with us, guys. Agador the Unpleasant Guy, Cat Strangler, English this week. But we do. We have Bigfoot. We have numerous guests joining us. Golf Dogs, that's Rock and Ron, has questions. Luchadora, moving.
Good.
No Way 90, Southern Sense is conservative sense.
Right.
And that is my Annie. And I pinch hit for her on her radio programs on Tuesdays and Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And we have Vito Esposito, who is the proprietor of the Radio Jihad Network and my and Tim's boss. So if I don't say something extra nice about Vito, I don't want to get I don't want to get fired.
Yeah, you got to be careful, Kel.
Vito
knows some guys.
Yep, he's on. Ladies and gentlemen, please go to Radio Jihad Network, heard right here on Block Talk Radio, and bookmark it for tonight. Vito is on at 6 p.m. Eastern time.
Who? I? What?
What's my name? Mommy?
Ooh, boo.
Help.
Ooh, boo. Don't scare me.
There was something I wanted to bring up, and I thought that this would be quite interesting in which to address. And this is an article from the National Post. Now, the National Post has really been annoying me of late because they seem to be pandering to quite the few leftists. But Rex Murphy is a prolific Canadian journalist. As a matter of fact, he is a Canadian national treasure. I'll put the link in the chat room for everybody right now before I continue further. I'm not going to read this totally verbatim, but some of his points I will. And this man is just unbelievable. He starts out the article as, well, it's entitled, "In Wake of James Foley's Beheading, Can We Finally See the I Word?" And he starts out, "What's in a name?" And that famous question, it came from the mouth of Shakespeare's Juliet Capulet, well, under her rhapsodic infatuation with Romeo Montague. What Juliet means is that she doesn't care about Romeo's last name, nor the feud between the Capulets and the Montagues. The name is meaningless. Love is all. And everybody, of course, is familiar with Romeo and Juliet. The ending wasn't great, but, hey, it was a love story all the same. But, you know, we're growing up now. We're adults, okay? We know there is a lot in a name. We understand that because name is our identity. And in some cases, a person's name is his or her calling card to the world. Our names speak of honor. We speak of the family name, or we once did, you know, in a sense. Under the clotted doctrine of political correctness, we pay backhanded homage to the importance attached to the real names of things by avoiding those real names, by dipping deeds and practices into the sludge of euphemism. Now, this is the case in point. A lot of people had a problem with naming things this week, particularly in response to the latest Islamist beheading of quote-unquote infidel American journalist James Foley. Now, with all due apologies, Mr. Murphy continues. He says, it was a medieval barbarity. He apologized to the Dark Ages, but he's absolutely correct, gentlemen. The poor captive, he was dressed in orange for the slaughter. He was put on camera, forced to speak before having his head sawed off with a knife, and the whole grisly, sadistic atrocity was quickly posted to the world's bulletin board, i.e. YouTube. This was courtesy of ISIS, the Iraq-Syria terror army, the latest and most ferocious of militant Islam's murderous brigades, a version of Al-Qaeda that even Al-Qaeda has renounced as too indiscriminately murderous. There really can be no more patience with the waffling and doublespeak and evasiveness that has characterized much of the public comment on Islamist terrorism since 9/11. It is simply not enough anymore. If there was everyone in the first place. And I agree with Mr. Murphy in that there should have never been any excuses. How to offer the banal rhetorical static that follows each murderous event? That these horrors, the homicides, beheadings, crucifixions, acid splashing, mass killings, have nothing to do with true religious faith? Well, religion, even in a form that civilized people may regard as violently debased, is still a religion to those who embrace it. Rex Murphy stresses, and he does not make apologies for his use of the word civilized here. If hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, subscribe to a violent theological creed, it simply will not do to pretend, as some Western leaders, clergymen, journalists, and professors insist on doing, that these are merely misguided souls who don't properly know how to interpret a holy book? Absolutely. Bang on. When I'm done this, I'm going to pass the mic to Jeff immediately after this, because he does cite the BBC security correspondent by the name of Frank Gardner, Jeff, and he said the barbaric ritual beheadings was not about religion. Well, how about many Alua Akbars that had been elated before Mr. Gardner would accept it, and kindred butcheries as religious? Have he and we so soon forgotten the psychiatrist at the military base in Fort Hood, Texas, who stood up and shouted Alua Akbar before killing 13 people, actually 14 because one was pregnant, and we know that is Nadal Hassan. That was not supposed to be about religion either. Military officials and law enforcement investigators turned collectively blue in the face before acknowledging what the killer himself proudly proclaimed, that it was, in his brutal mind, at least a religious act. Of course, we saw the two Michaels and the slaughter of Lee Rigby in the streets of London last year. Now, when will the world take the jihadists at their word? We are, as Jeff has alluded, we are at a critical juncture. We are at the crossroads. Are we going to be silent? Are we going to allow our politicians and the mainstream media to be silent? No. Is there any doubt whatsoever that ISIS, and this is currently, they're currently slaughtering Christians, people. They're beheading its opponents. They're purging non-believers and storming about Iraq and Syria with the cry, convert or die. Is this not fanatical? This is ruthless, and this is rooted in religion, and this is extremism, religious extremism. Now, what in any God's name does the first I in ISIS stand for? The President of the United States offered his, by now too familiar, a feckless mush on the killing. He declared that no faith teaches people to massacre innocents, but that's not how ISIS reads the Quran. When Obama... Who is Obama, anyway? How come he is not taking ISIS by its word, like the Taliban and Al-Qaeda? It is their declared goal of restoring the caliphate that stirs the demented soul. If they name their religion, let us name it too. It's a sign there is an utter ruthlessness and depravity about this movement, which is hideous and sickening and deplorable. And this is how Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott described ISIS this week. He said the killing was as close to pure evil as we are likely to see. Pure evil. There's a terminology
that,
adequate to the deed. In this contest with radical Islam, the answer to Juliet's question, what's in a name, is everything. And I want to thank the National Post and Rex Murphy in particular for that article. And Jeff, I do want to pass it on to you, because you did have an issue in your parliament with this particular person that said that, well, it was the BBC's, my apologies, British Broadcasting BBC, oh God. In Canada, we call it the CBC, So if I get the acronym mixed up, you can correct me.
Yeah.
But it was security correspondent Frank Gardner. And he said that this was not about religion. But, Jeff, we know it's everything about religion. Allahu Akbar, for goodness sake.
Well, all they're trying to do is, like, as we see, they're trying to play softball that what we really see, you're not really seeing that. It's not happening the way that you see it. And we all know you can fool some of the people some of the time, but I'll tell you what, a lot of people got their eyes open. You're not fooling no one no more. And you can say what you like, but we know what's before us all. And how dare they try, you know, to me, it's taking the piss out of the general public, if you don't mind me saying that, Kel, because that's the way it
Go
feels.
Ahead.
How dare they? They think they're in a position that they can sanitise these things. And people like Cameron say it's got nothing to do with Islam. And that. Well, he's starting to understand that it is everything to do with Islam. And the only way to deal with it is how we used to deal with it, with a very hard stick. And that's the only thing they know. We are weak at this moment in time. The politicians, the politicians elite are weak, and we look weak. And this is, what do you think we've seen all these things happen in the world, Kel? Because they know they've got us by our short and curlies, if you don't mind that expression, ladies and gentlemen. Because that is exactly the way they see us. We're weak. This is the best time to strike. And this is exactly, why do you think they're turning it up? Why do you think ISIS are making gains with them? Because they know there's no political will to take them on. You know, they're showing that the West is looking like it hasn't got no teeth to bite with anymore because of this political correctness driven and being involved with in Iraq and, of course, in Afghanistan. And they don't want to get bad press reviews, for goodness sake. People's lives are on the line. Christians have been crucified. People have been murdered all over the place. And they're worried about getting it, you know, seeing that the world's seeing us in a bad light. Well, too bad. If that's the case, we need to get in there, sort out. It's not right that these poor people and the rest of the world should suffer under the hands of this Islamists out there, these jihadists, this evil. What the gentleman said, pure evil, and I said it time and time again. And the only thing to do is to totally eradicate this threat. You know, and that's the case, isn't it, Kel? And I think I could all agree. This is the time. They're striking all at us, and we must show that we got the lion's teeth, and we can still bite and bite bloody hard. We can still play the game what they play, and we can play it harder because we've got everything in place. What we want, we've got right there. We can take down these Islamic groups just like that. If we need to, we know if we ask our military to sort out a plan, they could do it and do it very well. We know that, Kel, don't we? I mean, look what we got in front. Look at our military, what we certainly do.
And this article resonated with me because Rex Murphy brought up once again we have been seeing this on various blog posts. We've been seeing this on the internet, whether it be YouTube or whether it be from blogs from counter jihadists. But to see this actually related in the mainstream media was rather shocking with me, in that Rex Murphy said, look, let's call it for what it is. It is not a religion. It is all about a political caliphate. It is important for us to understand that we have to call Islamists for what it is. It's Muslims adhere to Islam. Therefore, Muslims are belonging to a political ideology. It's Islam, the political ideology. I found this rather fascinating that this was even published, despite it being the National Post, because like I aforementioned, the National Post tends to allow a lot of lefties to hang out at their publication now. I am rather stressed by that. But I want to turn the mic to Dave. And Dave, what did you get out of this article?
Well, you know, Vlad the Impaler, and no, I don't mean our friend Vlad Tepes, the real Vlad the Impaler in the 1400s, used to do things very similarly. In fact, there is a legend that when the Turkish army, when the Ottomans were on his border, he had already captured and maybe an advanced scouting party or something like that of theirs, and he impaled them. For those who don't know what that was taking a very large stake and basically sticking it in someone as you might put an eraser on a pencil, if anyone still remembers pencils. And this was a very horrific way to die. It usually took something on the order of a couple of days. But he did this as an example to the Ottoman army that this was one place they did not want to go. It was a very effective tactic, so says the legend, because the Ottoman army turned around and did not invade Wallachia, which was where Vlad Tepes was the ruler of. All right, and you see this same sort of medievalism with ISIS. This is the very same sort of thing that they're doing. They're acting in a way that is hundreds of years old, and the only difference here is that if there had been Facebook and YouTube in Vlad the Impaler's day, he would have put those guys being impaled on Facebook and sent that to the Ottoman Turks so that they could see it. The only difference today is in the technology, and that's really what has struck me about this whole thing. I love the article because, yes, it does speak to the reason why so many people in our countries have been asleep for so long. Even people in the UK, which trust me, my American friends, is getting, very bad with this Islamist incursion on the civil rights of the people of the United Kingdom. Tommy yeah. English, who is known to us as an anti-jihadist, grew up in the public schools in the United Kingdom, and he was harassed and bullied and beaten up by Islamists. And this was several years ago now, because Tommy's still a young man, but cast this back about 7 or so years, and Jeff can correct me if I'm wrong on this. But
no, you're right.
The problem here is that we will not recognize, even up to using the proper name. We in this country, in the United States, you can't use the word Islamist if you're in the government. You can't use the word jihad. You can't use anything that refers to Islam in any way when you're talking about things. It has to
thank
be something
care.
Else.
Right?
Yeah,
thank
yeah.
You
thank
care.
You, care. Exactly. Yes. They
isn't there
are the
a lot
ones
of redaction that went on there, Dave? There was a hell of a lot of redaction that went on, especially after the 9/11 commission.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yes.
There were like hundreds of phraseologies that were directly related to Islam, mm-hmm. and it was almost whittled down to, I don't know, 5 or 6. Of course, I'm being
right.
sarcastic.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, it's almost come down to belligerent lone wolf individuals having nothing to do with any Middle Eastern religion kind of thing, and very likely they'd probably take out the Middle Eastern thing too, because they wouldn't want that to offend anyone. But we have to now be able to say the I word, Islam. We have to combat things that this jihad that's coming out of, for instance, our institutions of higher learning. Trust me, I've had direct experience with that. It's disgusting. It is time for us to call these savages what they are, which is savages. None of us of any of these other religions. Now, not just in the Western world, but in the world would do this. Buddhists wouldn't do this. Hindus wouldn't do this. Okay? Christians wouldn't do this. Wiccans wouldn't do this. Native American people who have their own worship would not do this. Okay? This is only Islam that is doing this. It is out there in our face, violating our civil rights in everything, including our speech. And it has to stop, and it has to stop now. And I will turn the mic back to you because I'm about to foam at the mouth.
I'm very, very heartened by the fact, though, that Rex Murphy came out with this article and that he expressed that we have to stop with the Muslim approach. We have to start referring to them as Islamists, and that means across the board. We have to understand that there is an enemy within. We have to understand that they're here, and the adherents are here. When Islam comes to town, and Tim and myself, we talk about this all the time, as you know, especially on the Monday show. We talk about this ideology of Islam, and the when Islam comes to town, where will that smiling neighbor be? I want to pass it back to Jeff because he is experiencing firsthand. He's a few years ahead of us, like Jeff mentioned, and unfortunately, Jeff, you're right, we're catching up much more quickly than we anticipated. But when you look at the boroughs of London, like Luton and Tower Hamlets and Birmingham now, like your head must spin like a Linda Blair someday.
Well, it doesn't actually, because I'm a realist and I can see what's unfolded before me. I've seen it slow. It's been, we'll put it this way, it's been like in a car crash in slow motion. Been watching it happen, know that you could do something about it, and knowing that you can't do nothing about it. And that is the situation we have before us. And as you say, the solution is for the leaders of the world, the politics, is to change and to be more brutal, to these people, to put them in the place, because it's the only thing they know. Back to the early days of the Crusades, it's the only thing that they knew. It's the only thing that kept them quiet. When they had a bloody nose, they went away and thought about it, and that's exactly what they need now. It's the same sort of a treatment. The trouble is, the world is too civilized. They don't be seen to be. And the trouble is, political correctness raises its ugly head once again. The media's got it covered 24/7. They're watching. They're keeping a close eye. Anything untoward is it's put out in front of you. And they like certain stations in this country, they roll it and roll it and roll it and roll it and roll it. That's what they do. And this is what we're up against, you know. And it is a problem. We know that it can be resolved, but it does take, you know, political minds as well to, you know, to make the changes that we can. Take the gloves off and let's do what our forefathers have done before us. You know, maybe not just hate the streets things, but we can do things constructively to oppose these people, put them in a place. To show that we have our own laws, we don't need any sort of barbaric laws brought upon our lands, our cities, and if they want to create their own apartheid, they can take it back to their very own countries that they come from, where they originated, because we don't want no part of apartheid in our countries. The segregation, separate themselves from the rest of the rest of the public, simply because you know, we are the infidel, we are the kuffar, and that is it. That has got to be stopped, but it takes the political willpower to do it. We need people in power.
It absolutely does.
I don't know what you think about it, Dave, but I think we just need that.
Oh, yeah.
We're making good points here that what could be done and what should be done, but what we're not seeing is the things that we talk about is common sense.
Well, you know,
Jeff, Dave?
I'd hate to cut you off, but we do speak in circles sometimes. And what you're saying, of course, I mean, we feel the passion, we speak the passion. But what we're doing is not coming up with logical and empirical solutions. But I am. This is why I want to brainstorm, and that we have to address this right on. This is why this article intrigued me. We have to really, really do something much more proactive. We have to. We have to address the issue head on, and we have to ensure our politicians do. We are lay people. We speak on the streets, okay? We put our boots to the ground. We get on the radio shows. We tell you what is wrong with Islam, but we are not convincing the politicians that are actually supposed to be our caregivers. This is what is wrong. If we do not pay attention to articles like Rex Murphy's, we are doomed. And we are actually down to our last 20 minutes. And I want to play something that I shared with Agador. And but I want to give Agador a chance to wrap up his points about this.
Okay. Well, since we're in the last 20 minutes, I'll just say, first of all, Kel, thank you for bringing me on, letting me pinch hit for Tim. I know it's not as good as Tim, but... did my best. Hope everyone will listen to The Unpleasant Blind Guy. That link is up in the show notes.
You are great.
I hope everyone will join us on Thursday for Islam Exposed. We're going to have some very good stuff. All politics is local, and I've got a nice local story to where I am that I will impart. And, you know, Kel, please carry on. Thank you again. Jeff, it's always great to work with you, brother. You are a fantastic anti-jihadist, and I will definitely see you later on. You guys, I'm going to turn it back over to Kel.
Okay, I want to share something with you. This has absolutely nothing to do with Islam, okay? But you know what? It's Monday, and be quiet, moving, and VORP. Yes, VORP. Be quiet, moving, and Agador. Actually, I want to say hi to VORP in the chat room. He just joined us. Hey, VORP. But you guys are having great sunshine, so I'm kind of crawling the walls here because we've had nothing but rain for the last 36 days. So I was doing a conference call. And I said, I'm going to play this. I don't care if it has nothing to do with Islam. I'm playing this. And people, you may or may not be aware that I really like Ned. Ned is one of my best YouTube buddies. And I came across this. And, well, you know what? Hey, you know, oh, nigga, please. Now, stop with the race riots already. And, yes, we can say nigga, N-I-G-G-A, because Chris Rock said we could. But this is so funny. Please enjoy this 4.5 minutes.
County Sheriff's Office, how may I direct your call, please?
Yeah, can I speak to somebody regarding this whole black target controversy?
Okay.
Officer, how can I help you?
Yeah, I was calling about this controversy about the black targets.
Yes, sir.
Well, I heard that your police force has switched from black to blue targets because of some kind of possible racial issues.
Well, we changed about 6 months ago, sir. The department felt that we might be sending the wrong message to the African American, you know, targeting black targets. So we decided to change it to a blue target. That way we were offending no one.
Oh, what a crock of shit.
Well,
wasting my tax dollars to replace perfectly good black targets.
Well, sir, you know, we felt that the African-American community was feeling that they were being singled out at this point.
Oh, bullshit. You know what this is? This is political correctness gone haywire. I mean, it's just a black silhouette, correct?
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's not like it's got a big afro on it, you know.
Yeah.
your officers weren't putting gold teeth and baggy jeans on the targets and having the silhouettes come at them with Get Rich or Die Trying blasting in the background.
No, sir.
No black targets with do-rags pulling up in the clay,
no,
bling-blinging the ice on top of some for-us, by-us, foo-boo bullshit.
No, definitely not. Just plain black silhouettes.
Well, then it's obviously not racial.
No, sir.
I mean, come on. You know, if you really think about it, this whole thing is just preposterous. I mean, black targets, there ain't nobody that black unless you're shooting at fucking Manute Bowl. I mean. Hello?
Officer How may I help you?
This is just ridiculous. I mean, when I go into a bar and order a white Russian, does that mean I'm a fucking skinhead?
Well, sir, you know, we just made that change. We felt it was in the best interest of the community. And
when I was a little boy and I used to shoot only my black G.I. Joes with a BB gun, did that make me a fucking racist?
Well, you know, sir, you might have some issues there.
All right, well, forget that one. Look, this is just, I mean, when I go out to the local pub and I play darts and I try to hit that red bullseye, does that mean that subconsciously I want to poke a fucking Native American side
out?
Can
I get your name?
My name's Ned.
Ned?
Look, my name is irrelevant. The fact is I'm a taxpaying citizen, and I want to know what you're going to be doing with all those leftover black targets.
We're going to just burn them. That way they're not being used anywhere else.
Well, I got a better idea. Why don't you put them in a room together and they'll just shoot each other. Black on black crime.
Well, Ned, I don't feel that that's probably appropriate.
Well, exactly. That's my point. You see how ridiculous that sounds?
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
It's like saying Andre Agassi is going to start beating the shit out of Chinese people with a tennis racket because he uses yellow tennis balls. It's fucking ridiculous. Hello?
County Sheriff's Office, how may I direct your call?
Officer who wants to shoot black people, please.
Officer, how can I help you?
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of 8-ball lately,
Ned,
and I've been getting an uncanny urge
calling
to suck off a black man while I jiggle his ball. Hello?
Officer, how can I help you?
Yeah, I got a great idea for a new reality show featuring your department.
Ned, I haven't got time for this.
It's a remake of SWAT.
Ned.
Except since your department likes to shoot black people so much.
Ned.
Instead of special weapons and tactics, it's Supreme Whites Attack Tyrone. I knew you'd like it. And here's a preview of the first episode.
All right, Ned.
Don't shoot! I'm an innocent black man!
How do you like... Hello?
Officer, how can I help you?
1 out of 12.
Ned?
Looks like we got a bunch of racist cops here,
Ned,
who hate the brothers so much that if they even think about the color black,
you need to quit calling.
They're
going to
shoot every motherfucking in the place.
Ned.
So it looks like we're
going
to have to hit them with a little Kanye West action.
Pitted Kanye.
Now, I ain't saying they don't like n***ers.
Ned.
The black targets make them shoot quicker. I ain't saying they don't like n***ers. But black targets make them shoot quicker. Skin brown, so go ahead, draw down. Skin brown, so go ahead, draw down. Skin brown, so hello.
Okay, some people may take umbrage to that, but quite frankly, I don't care. I am the Red Fox blogger. I am the Mad Fox blogger. I thought that it was perfect to play, especially in light of what's going on in the United States right now with the race riots. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, don't say they're protests. They're not. They're riots. They are looting stores. They're smashing windows. They are stealing stuff. And all because of Sir Michael Brown, who by the way, passed away, and his funeral was today, and he has been already offered sainthood. Give me a break, okay?
Oh,
this guy was 18 years old. He was well over 6 feet tall, over 200 pounds. He was shoving around a little shopkeeper. He had stolen goods, and he did not get shot in the back, okay? Let's get that clear. He confronted the police officer as he was being bundled into the cruiser. He made a grab for the one police officer's gun. Thus, the other police officer stood up to the task, did what he was trained to do, and subdue this potential killer, who probably would have gotten his hands on the gun and shot that man dead. Quit making a saint out of this black hoodlum. He was not anything more than a street hustler and a punk. But we're going back to the topic at hand. We've got like 5 minutes of talking points. So I'd like to give the two fine gentlemen still with me. I want to thank Moving so very much for being here. But, Jeff, I'm going to pass it to you. I want to give you 2 minutes of your final talking points about everything you've heard tonight.
Well, it's been, as I say, I hope the listeners and the chat room have enjoyed the show this evening. we've been talking about some very topical things this evening. and it's a great honour and privilege to be here, stepping in while Tim's been a bit poorly. So I've got to thank you, Cal, and of course to Agador. It's always a pleasure to hear my dear friend Agador. And it's great hearing moving, calling. And of course, Wahabi. I always get it wrong, don't I, Cal? Wahabi called in to wish Tim well as well. I thought that was very nice as well. but once again, thank you so much for asking me if I'd want to still be a part of the show this evening. So thank you so much, Cal. and I'll speak to you. I'm going to cut myself off short in a minute, Kel, so I need to get a cup of tea because my throat is so dry, as you can hear. But I've got to thank you. And all the listeners out there, it's been great. Thank you very much, Kel, for letting me be a part of this great show this evening. So thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff.
I implored and begged and stilled to get you here.
no, you just asked me nice, didn't you, Kel?
Okay. I paid you money. No. oh, Jeff, I'll be talking with you soon. Oh, thank you so much. And Dave, I'm going to give you your 2 minutes of talking points.
Okay, all right. I wasn't sure you'd have the time earlier, but that's great. Jeff, always a pleasure to work with you, my friend. We need to get this word out. And I have to say that the anti-jihadists in the UK were the ones who have been sounding the alarm the loudest. And they have been effective because the rest of the world is now listening to them. And they're beginning to listen to people in other countries and here in the States who have been sounding the alarm, too, that have been saying this ideology is evil. And it's time that we begin to confront it directly and not indirectly. And, Kel, I want to say again that I'm no substitute for Tim, but I did my best, and I appreciate you having me on today. And thank you very much. I will see you, young lady, on Thursday for Islam Exposed, and we will have a good time there.
At 1 p.m. Eastern Time.
That's right, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Islam Exposed, right on Blog Talk Radio. And until then, folks, don't forget to listen to The Unpleasant Blind Guy. And Jeff and Kel, thank you again. And this is The Unpleasant Blind Guy. Howdy.
And ladies
thank
and
you,
gentlemen.
Thank you, Kel.
Thank you, gentlemen, so very much. I really appreciate you both stepping in. And, yes, Tim wears size 12 shoes. You guys filled in at size 12. Oh, come on. You guys were great. You really stepped to the plate and helped this little fox out. I am so grateful to the both of you. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm grateful to all of you. I'm grateful to people that listen in archive. I'm grateful to people that listen on other devices. Tim and myself, we're very, very proud that we do this show. It is important to us, and we believe it's important to you because there is a threat out there. It's called Islam, and we have to stop it. It's mass Islamity. Stop the insanity. We will see you. Where am I going to see you guys next? Oh, okay, where's my? Where am I? What show am I on? Hang on. Let me get my schedule. I'm kidding. Everybody knows that I produce for a lot of shows. I am also a pinch hitter with Annie at Southern Sense's Conservative Sense Tuesdays and Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And at 6 p.m. on the Radio Jihad Network, we are the Freedom Loving Infidels. And I have an announcement to make for you, to you. Vlad Tepes will have his own radio show. It's debuting tomorrow night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So please try to tune in and listen to that. It should be exciting. We, of course, have Mike Holt of Restore Australia Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Islam Exposed, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and then I Fly Solo at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. All of them heard on the Radio Jihad Network. Well, I'm sorry. All of them heard Red Fox Blogger, except the Tuesday show. That one's heard on the Radio Jihad Network. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for joining us. Please have a wonderful evening. We will talk again tomorrow. Gentlemen, have a wonderful evening yourselves.
Great good evening, night. Folks. Thank you, Kel.
Catch you later, Dave. Bye-bye, guys.
You bet.
Keep hope alive.
I know sometimes in life you feel that everything is lost, and that mountain is just too high to climb.
Keep hope alive.
Well, that's when you gotta dig deep down inside and reach that inner strength you never knew you had. Carry on another day. Another day goes by and you're outside, still wondering why, watching everything you work so hard, and life all begins to fall apart. It breaks your heart to see it all crumbling at the wayside. You wanna lay your head down, pack it in and say goodbye, cause there's nothing left here to keep hope alive. Until you see the only two things in life that really matter. It's a little girl and a little boy. Want your foolish pride, want your beautiful joy. What's left of a candy bar when it's like the remains of a Chips Ahoy. Playing with a piece of driftwood that create a little mind made into a beautiful toy. And at that moment you realize you gotta rebuild everything Mother Nature had just destroyed. Their precious little heartbeat gave you the strength of a thousand men. Gave you the will to get back up on your feet again. Because you knew right then this battle wasn't about you, it's all about them. And you reassured them like all your daddy can. And they knew right then that everything was gonna be alright. Some harm's way, putting in all those hours, and all my friends working day and night, making it right here, tunnel of towers, bringing us hope like a ray of sunshine, peeking through the clouds, clearing the showers. Well, here's to you, two shots of whiskey, one Jameson, one Johnny Powers, from Coney Island to Seaside Heights, Long Beach, Freeport, the Lower East Side, mass of people, the sheep's head.